Hi there, and welcome to the Grief and Rebirth podcast. I'm your host, author, and trauma survivor, Irene Weinberg, here to encourage you wherever you are in your healing journey. In each episode, I chat with incredible grief and trauma specialists, healers, mediums, and celebs, as well as remarkable people who have inspiring healing stories to share. If you're looking for a podcast that's both uplifting and inspiring, you've found it. Let us help you find your joy in life. Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining me today. I'm speaking to you from the hills of West Orange, New Jersey on a beautiful fall day. And today's remarkable guest is coming to us from Ontario, Canada. Yvonne Heath specializes in bringing death out of the closet. This inspiring nurse turned author, speaker, and changemaker has written an incredibly wise book titled Love Your Life to Death. It is a compelling narrative that addresses navigating life to its final passage, motivating people to live their lives fully to help them die peacefully. Yvonne has spoken internationally to medical professionals, business leaders, government staff, and volunteer organizations. She has also created empowering workshops, keynotes, and an online program that has changed thousands of lives. And she is also a TV and radio host, a blogger, and has done a TEDx talk. Yvonne is definitely what I would call a very high achiever. I've read Yvonne's book, Love Your Life to Death, so I definitely know that this is going to be a very wise and empowering interview. But first, let's take a quick minute to show some love to our sponsors. Yvonne, a warm welcome to Grief and Rebirth Podcast. Let's begin our interview with this question. Please tell us about your early nursing journey and the lessons you learned about quality in life as opposed to quantity of life.
Oh, geez, Irene, thank you. I am so honored to be here. And wow, that is a loaded question, isn't it?
Yes.
I remember graduating December 87, and I was this, you know, early 20s, so naive, and I was going to help so many people, and I had all this knowledge, and I had no idea how ill-prepared I was to face what I would face in my nursing career and personally. And so my nursing career was incredible. It brought me to various places in the United States and Canada. I worked in Louisiana and Texas, New York State, and in almost every department in emergency, intensive care, chemotherapy, palliative care, and hospice. And it's so interesting because there was a common thread throughout, no matter where I was, no matter what department, that we really didn't talk about grief, death, and dying. I mean, we dealt with it. We helped people and supported people often on their worst day in trauma when people died. And yet, you know, I wouldn't really consider it real conversations. You know, you went through this trauma as a professional. The next day is like, oh, that was a hard day. And you went back the next day and, oh, I'm fine. Are you fine? Oh, yeah, we all checked in. It was just like this superficial, right? This superficial pretending that the pretending.
Don't touch the real feelings. Don't touch the real feelings.
Like you're people are asking, how are you doing? And they're just crossing their fingers, like, please just tell me you're fine. I don't want to dive in too deep.
Right.
And, you know, I did that for a long time. And I could just, it was like layers of excessive suffering were kind of building, although, you know, you kept pretending you're fine. And then in 15 years working in chemotherapy, when you talk about that question of quality of life versus quantity of life, is really where I could no longer ignore it because the light was shining. And I loved being in the chemotherapy clinic because I got to really know people. And I visited patients at home. I when I was pregnant with my twins, this one lady, she went home to die. And when my babies were born, I brought them to see her. Like I was so enmeshed, and yeah. I suffered excessively because of it, because I was ill prepared for grief. And in watching these families, it was like this Y in the road. Over here, families who, no matter what the prognosis, maybe somebody was young and they were dying. And this family over here had raw, real conversations and allowed all feelings, and this, you know, allowed every emotion and allowed the children to be a part of it, and they grieved openly. And when a cure was no longer to be had, they said, no, we want quality of life. We're going to go home. We're going to be comfortable. We're going to, you know, have pain medication and let her be outside and have the dogs and the kids and the cats and live her life to the fullest. And that person died peacefully in the family. You know, they were able to grieve and then find joy in their lives again. Family over here, perhaps the same prognosis. And everyone was like, no, no, we're going to like fight, right? The fight. We're going to fight to the end. And every treatment, whether it's working or not, and no one was having real conversations. And there was no talking about dying or talking about, you know, comfort measures only. And what really the suffering that I felt was when those patients would secretly say to me, I don't want to do all of this. And I would beg them. I'd say, please talk to your family. And they'd say, no, they're not ready for me to give up.
Talk about giving your power over to everyone else, even at the very end.
Unbelievable. And they, you know, they felt like it was, they needed to do that for their family. And as I watched these people die in fear and sadness, being treated excessively with futile medicine, and then the family who didn't have real conversations, end of life planning wasn't done. And those families were fractured beyond repair. And I, as a healthcare professional, watching that, it was excruciating. And so I could no longer ignore it. And, you know, as I shared in my book, it was like one more story. I walked into work and my coworker's like, oh, you're going to like this one. I said, you're getting me fired up. It's 8 a.m. And she said, a lady's coming in for a blood transfusion. She had been refusing. She just wanted comfort measures. She was at a nursing home. She couldn't feed herself. She couldn't walk. She was ready to die. And her doctor talked her into having a blood transfusion, saying it would help her feel better, which would be very short-lived. And do you know what it's like to find a vein on somebody? So the piece, Irene, that I haven't said yet was she was 105.
Oh, my gosh. And he was still trying to keep her alive every single second. Like when and taking away from her quality of life at the end.
I could no longer be silent. I could no longer be silent. So it's time for us to have those conversations. And truly, imagine if we talked about planned and prepared for grief and had those conversations, normalized those conversations about death and dying before we were facing them. Before, this is my whole message. People think I'm a grief counselor. I say, no, there's grief counselors out there. I want to talk about it before. Let's develop coping skills and strategies and create a soft landing for ourselves and normalize these conversations. And what do we believe about life and death?
That's right. You're absolutely
talk
right.
About it.
Now, you know, I so resonate with what you're saying because I have a mom turning 96. And because our listeners know I had my own near-death experience and all the things that happened to me, my mom and I talk very openly about everything. And she's saying, I'm not ready to go yet. You know, we talk about that. But she knows. I say, Mom, when you go, you're not going to be gone. You know, you're still going to be around. And she has made everything. We've had the talk, which we'll talk about we'll talk about that in our interview. And it absolutely makes a tremendous difference. My brothers and I are already working as a team. My mother everyone is very conscious. She turned down a surgery that she could have had because she said, what do I need that for now? And it's exactly what you're talking about. And when I read your book, I so resonated with it. And I was like, yes, we're doing it. We are living what Yvonne is talking about, you know? Tell me, what inspired you to birth both your book, Love Your Life to Death? Well, we just heard what inspired you. And the I Just Showed Up movement. Tell us about each and share the wave of goodness each one has created in people's lives.
Well, and it's funny because in all of this excessive suffering I was experiencing in my professional life, it was actually in 2010 where I just said, okay, I really need to do something different. And yet it still took me a couple of years. But in 2010, I share openly, unapologetically, as you said, is there, you know, I'm an open book, I'm an oversharer. And in 2010, our older son, Tyler, he experienced tremendous grief. He had experienced grief. And I mean, you know, you don't know what you don't know. You're trying to help. And he had tremendous dreams of being a professional snowboarder, wrecked his knee, and he had lots of complications. And I think that was the beginning. He spiraled down a very dangerous road of drugs and addiction.
Oh my goodness.
At age 16. And, you know, I sat back and I'm working in chemotherapy. We have twins who are toddlers because, you know, I decided to have twins at 40. And
you are definitely a high achiever.
That was a big one, twins at 40. And he, you know, it was like, I just sat back and it was like my whole world was so heavy. And I thought, I would not survive a tragic ending. Like I don't believe I would survive it, whether even if I was still alive, you know, that we know many people who have a pulse, but they are not really living.
That's true.
And now I have little children, and would I become another person to grieve? And again, I could no longer ignore how ill-prepared I was personally and professionally for grief.
For your own child.
Well, yeah. And so, you know, we did everything we could and we supported Tyler as much as we could. And thank goodness, you know, he turned his life around and we helped him. He has had several friends who have died in the map.
Wow.
So, you know, that's how real it was. And there's been a lot of pain to navigate, but I started to ask healthcare professionals, are we well prepared for grief personally and professionally? And everyone's like, oh God, no, we're terrible at it. And you know, I started to ask, and then I just couldn't ignore things. My husband's a paramedic as well. So he knows as well what it's like, you know, the professionals, someone's very upset. Hey, you all right? Yeah, that was a hard call. Yeah, okay. And that's the end. And so I became more anxious in my career, saying I need to be a voice for change. And, you know, as many of us have a life-changing moment, there was a pop-up on Facebook, how to write a best-selling book.
Oh my goodness.
And I was sitting right here and I looked at my husband over there and I'm like, oh my God, honey, that's it. I'm going to leave my 27-year nursing career and write a book. Isn't that amazing?
And it's going to be a bestseller.
And you know, here we are, like a mortgage, depend on two incomes, three kids. And he's like, yeah, that's great, honey, except that you don't write. I said, I know, isn't it amazing? it was like passion and purpose kidnapped me. And the other significant moment was that I sent out an email and I said to people, I am going to write a book. I don't want surveys and statistics. I want people's real stories, gritty, raw, unapologetic stories, being in the deep trenches of grief, how you got through to the other side. I want to hear from professionals. Will anyone share their stories with me? And you can imagine, Irene, what happened. It's 5 years later, 5.5 years later, and the stories haven't stopped coming. And so in my book, I shared people's stories ages 11 to 101. And it changed my life. And it was such an incredible journey to just be present and validate and listen to stories. Some people had been silenced with their stories for 50 years. No one wanted to hear them. They just needed to be heard.
You did them such a favor because you made them. My mother tells a story of, she's living in assisted living now, and she became friendly with a man who looked forward to her coming in. He was in a wheelchair. He had all kinds of physical problems. She looked forward to him coming in. He looked forward to her coming in every day. And all he wanted to do was tell her about his life. And about 3 months after she met him, he passed. Aww. And she did him such, I think that she really helped him.
Absolutely.
Work through that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We don't always need a professional, right? And that's so when I wrote my book and I started to share it, and I mean, I I'm humbled by the feedback of people. Thousands of people have read it, and people are saying all the time, your book helped me so much. I was able to speak at my friend's funeral. I listened to a story. I did my end of life plan. Oh my, and just, you know, those aha moments. And so the book was extraordinary, and I started speaking, and which I was never on my radar either. But I knew, like, I'm really funny, right? Like, I'm sure you already can see that. And so I can be funny.
That's why you and I are hitting it off, because me too.
Exactly. But, you know, because life's already serious enough, right? And when I watched the movie Patch Adams in 1998, I became like the Patch Adams. And actually, that's why my background is so fun. I interviewed Patch Adams on my show, which was so fun. For those of you who don't know Patch Adams, he just brings joy and clowning to people on who are suffering. You know, he's been at the bedside of more than 10,000 people. So from the book and speaking, and then I did my TED talk, and the message for my book, I believe that every adult, I believe it's a wonderful resource for every adult. And then I wanted everyone to realize that, you know, children need to be a part of these conversations, teens, adults of all ages. And I became anxious again, like I did before. You know, it's kind of like these downloads come to you. And I said, I need children to understand. And when people want to be validated, we don't always need a professional. Anyone can just show up. And I went, oh, wait a minute. Just show up. That's all, you know, when you don't know what to do. Because when I was interviewing people, Irene, I heard more than anything, people are compassionate, but they're terrified to do or say the wrong thing. They say, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. And so I wanted to help people. When you don't know what to do, you don't know what to say. Yes, it's awkward or uncomfortable. Just show up. That's so the I just showed up movement. Hashtag I just showed up. That's the movement. Teaching people of all ages how to just show up for themselves and each other so they are empowered and resilient when grief arrives.
That's wonderful. Do you do that through workshops and all of that kind of thing, or?
Workshops, presentations, that's what I shared in my TED talk. And of course, I share that in my online, I created my online program, Get Ready for Grief, which I shared about the I Just Showed Up movement as well, because my biggest thing is I want people to have a lifetime resource, right? Because you can't just read a book or hear a presentation or go to, you know, Grief 101-3 and you're certified right. for life, right? Grief is a part of this journey, and it's not just at end of life. It's divorce, diagnosis, job loss. It's experienced in any and every heartache and loss, transitions, and even in the good stuff. So important for people to understand. I mean, you have a baby, and you might grieve the fact that you can't just take off on the weekend. You might grieve sleep because, you know, it's a whole different thing.
Absolutely.
Right? So we have to understand, and grief isn't always just crying in the corner. We are experiencing global grief right now in this pandemic.
Absolutely.
In this pandemic, in everything, for some people, there's disappointment. For others, there's devastation, right? Just all along the spectrum, loss, grief. And when we can acknowledge and allow all of our feelings and other people's feelings and just show up for each other without judgment, and without trying to fix it.
That's a challenge because that's a Absolutely. Discipline, because I've just started to learn that. I understand that I can hear you, but I can't, you can fix it. That's sort of the premise behind Grief and Rebirth podcast, because I'm interviewing so many wonderful people, very much yourself included, and I want them to say, you can help yourself. Go listen. One of these people, maybe a few of them, can help you. And you don't have to stay stuck.
Absolutely. We cannot. It's like when people say, oh, you make me happy, you make me mad. It's like, I can't make anybody anything, right? And so that gives everyone their own power back too, right? You are in charge of your own happiness. And that's where the whole developing your own coping skills and strategies and creating a soft landing for yourself. Someone can give you the absolute world. They can't make you happy, right?
You're absolutely right.
Just doesn't work that way. And so that also takes the pressure off of people, right? If something is very sad and someone died by suicide, opioid overdose, whatever, I mean, these heart-wrenching experiences and losses. And if you can just say, okay, I know it's not my job to fix my friend, but I can just show up for her and just walk in and say, I don't know what to say, but I'm here. And I care. And this is heartbreaking. I'm a mess too, right? That's okay. We don't have to fix it.
Right. We can be authentic and vulnerable. Well, tell me this. One of the things you talked about in your book is that people have a death phobia. And I loved how you put that. Why are people so scared to death of death? You want to talk to that?
Yes. Well, it's interesting because I think that is my first chapter. Why have we become so death phobic? And I didn't really, as a nurse, again, you just kind of go along. You don't really try to figure all of this stuff out. So I didn't really understand it as well as I do now.
But by the way, as a nurse, are people also still scared to death of death, even though they're working in that profession? I mean, they're seeing it all the time.
Oh, we don't, so many don't talk about it in a real meaningful way. And the assumption, people assume that healthcare professionals are great at this stuff. Oh no, we're not. We avoid it as well. Or it's like, well, let's get the palliative care team in, or let's get the hospice team in. And, that's all, they are wonderful, but they can't be everywhere all the time. And there's patients everywhere dealing with this stuff. So, we really need a reframing of all of this. But it really isn't our fault, because it's something that has happened slowly over time. I mean, you think back in the day, the doctor came over, his little medicine bag, and he tried to fix and did his very best, and that was it. And that person most likely died at home with minimal intervention. And then you took care of the body and laid out in the parlor. And like the whole family was a part of this experience. And we also lived with all multi-generationally, right? So we witnessed the aging process we witnessed, and these days, as technology took over, now we can fix anyone. You can go to the intensive care, you can be on machines, and so we believe that we can cure anything. And we also have all of these anti-aging campaigns and fight aging. And I'm just gonna stop right there and say there is beauty and gloriousness in every decade. Can we just talk about aging gracefully and fabulously? The whole anti-aging is...
I definitely have that as a question for you, because that is really...
Imaging.
It's an issue that touches everybody.
Yes. And don't ask. It's rude to ask someone how old they are. You know what? I'm going to be 56 in February, and I am so delighted to... What a privilege. Right? What a privilege to live this long. And I hope I live a whole bunch more decades, and I'm going to brag about it along the way.
I'm just like you.
Wrinkles, whatever. I'm all good with it. And so we've slowly sanitized our society, right? We don't take care of people who are ill and dying at home. I mean, the hospice movement has certainly helped with that. But there's still many people that would prefer to die at home that die in intensive cares. We have anti-aging. Many people live in nursing homes. We don't live with our elders like we
used to. Are people so afraid of death because they're afraid of dying? Being afraid of being alone or dying alone? Or are they afraid of death because just the concept of losing control and being kaput, if they don't have another belief system, is fearful?
I think there's so many, the unknown, right? The fear of the unknown. How am I going to die? When am I going to die? Am I going to suffer? Will I be in pain? And again, I believe that the more we have these conversations, the better. Let's talk about, right? It's just like the death cafes are so extraordinary because you just go out there and talk about what do you fear? And let's address each of those things, you know, because medical technology, there's a lot of wonderfulness about it, like pain medication. I'm letting you know that I don't fear my death, and maybe that will change as I go along, but I'm going to hold on to that now. But I will be more than happy to be loopy on a pain pump. No, I'm not going to be a big hero. And we have that technology to die well, right? And we can create a beautiful death. I've been at the bedside of what I would call a terrible death. And I've been at the bedside of a beautiful death. And I've
How about describing each to us?
So a beautiful death is when, certainly I wrote about Homer in my book, intro.
Well. And
that was one of the first stories that I was told. And Homer when he was 17, he lost his sight and he just continued on to live this incredible life. I mean, he had five children. He golfed, bowled, did radio. He did not let his blindness stop him. And he said, just because I'm blind doesn't mean I can't see. I mean, he was just this extraordinary human. And so when he was ill and he knew he was dying, he just created, he had his daughter bring a tie to the hospital so he could knot it properly because he didn't want anybody messing it up. He had them pick out a beautiful suit. He wrote letters to his family, had them dictated. He got lockets for his daughters and wife. He did all of these beautiful things and left this legacy of love. And he died peacefully with his daughters holding his hands. I mean, heartwarming, heart-wrenching, yes. And that is what I would call a good death, right? Whereas
the whole thing he left to his daughters.
Oh,
what a legacy he left to his daughters.
Beautiful letters to his family and thanking them for helping him have a great life. I mean, extraordinary. And then there's the opposite where, again, right to the end, someone is dying and they're on machines and everyone's yelling, do something, save him. And it's just, it's so painful. It's so painful. And then, you know, the person is dying in fear. You could feel it. And everyone around is hysterical. And then the families are fighting. We've had to call security on a family, right? Because they were just fighting with each other. In that
while their loved one was dying.
While their loved one was dying at a time where they could be supporting each other and grieving openly and loving this person. And I mean, that's excruciating. Those are the moments that chip away at your heart and soul, right? And they're avoidable. They're avoidable. And that's, you know, we think people think, well, I don't want to talk about this stuff. Well, the truth is we're going to have to talk about it at some point.
Or if they don't.
Well, someone, like when that person dies, someone's going to have to talk about it. So
yeah,
we can either talk about it, have those uncomfortable conversations before. And if there's things to work out, have that, you know, well, what do you mean we're going to do this? I don't know. I want to do this. Have those conversations before or at the time of grief and loss and crisis. It's not, those conversations are not avoidable forever. Right. And it is up to us, and I believe, sorry, here's a little tough love, it is our responsibility to plan our own life and our own end of life. And if there's someone that you're going to have a say at their end of life, I just say, have that awkward conversation. How do you start it? Awkward conversation coming up. We have to talk about this because I want to honor you in your life and at your end of life.
What do you want? Let us structure this. You're absolutely right. So people are scared to death of death, but they also have a morbid fear of growing old and they don't like the elderly. Mm. So how do you suggest, Yvonne, that people diffuse that fear of getting older? And how can we create more understanding and acceptance regarding aging? This is a big one for the world.
Absolutely. It is a big one. And I believe it's like I always say, change starts with me and it starts with you, right? So the greatest thing, there's two things that people do. They either walk around, they're really mad at everybody for rah, 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 you're not, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. And no one really listens because you're that person that's always telling everyone what to do. So what I'm choosing is to be the very best version of myself, be as authentic, vulnerable, and imperfect as I can be, and have these conversations. And, you know, when I, my son's like, so, wow, mom, your hair is really gray, isn't it? I said, yes, actually, it really is. Thank you for pointing that out. He's not a fan. And I said, you know what? I'm okay with that. And yes, I do have laugh lines and wrinkles. And thank you very much for pointing that out. And I'm going to be a voice for change. I'm going to be a voice for acceptance. One of my closest friends in the world is 96 years old. Her name is Eva Olson, and she has survived a challenging life throughout her life, including the Holocaust.
Wow.
Right. So I share Eva's message and I share her on Zoom whenever I can. She's not like, she's my good friend. She has tremendous wisdom. She's 96. Right? You know, like it has nothing to do with age. It's about letting your spirit get old. And so like in my book, I shared Ken Raven and Sandy Raven, you know, they're 20 years apart. Well, my book was 5.5 years ago when I interviewed, I think he was 92. He's 96 as well. And he's just living life.
Wow.
Oh, absolutely. So what I'm going to do is help people to, you know, really see and have those conversations. And if you're afraid, that's okay. You don't need to be ashamed to be, let's have the conversation about it. Right. Let's just talk about it.
You can choose to be more positive. You can choose to look at it in a different way. Some people don't even know they have the choice.
I always, always, always tell people we always have a choice. We don't always have the choice we wish we had. But we all know, and you know, that aging is a privilege. Aging is a privilege that not everybody, right? Not everybody has that privilege.
You're right. Then everybody gets to have.
Right. You know, somebody says, oh, I don't want to turn 70. I said, well, you know, somebody who died in their 20s would absolutely love to be wrinkled and gray in their 70s. Think about it. Right.
Absolutely.
And you can have your little moment. And then really, I think, you know, just really think about it. This is a privilege. However long I'm here is a privilege.
Every day. Absolutely.
Every single day is a privilege.
So why should a person be afraid of living an unlived life?
Ooh, well, I think the saddest word is regret, right?
And that leads to my asking you the 5 greatest regrets of the dying.
Ooh, I don't think I have them memorized.
Or whatever you could bring up.
Well, I was truly, yeah. I mean, when you think of the regrets at end of life, and I mean, I I've been at the bedside of many dying people. It's never about, oh gosh, I wish I would have got that, you know, Rolls Royce. I wish I would have accumulated more things. I wish I would have worked more hours. It really, you know, when people stop and they go, oh, gosh, why didn't I play baseball with my kid more? Why didn't I do the things that made me happy more? What was so important? And like, I worked 80 hours a week for what? And those are the things. And how sad, right? How sad to get to the end of your life, which isn't always when you think it's going to be, right? Mm-hmm. It isn't always in your 90s or whatever. So to have that regret I mean, we're all going to have things like, geez, I wish I would have done that differently. But that's so, so different than not living your life, like feeling like, oh, I wanted to do something different. And I remember a friend of mine, and I just thought this was so fantastic, because living a life of passion and purpose, whatever that passion is, you don't have to get a pop-up on Facebook and leave your 27-year nursing career, or, you know, I like start this beautiful, incredible podcast and have these conversations, but that's what your heart is calling to, right? And when you ignore that, that is what is going to lead to regret. I have a friend who just, she had a very successful videography business and she worked very hard and she did it for so long. And then she said, you know, I just want to be a dog walker.
Wow.
Right. And I said, you know what? You need to go be the best dog walker in town.
Right.
If you like just have this passion, you know, I want to grow 1,000 different kinds of flowers. Oh my goodness. Figure out how you're going to do that. Feed your heart. We all have something, right? That's just that passion. And I believe whatever the other regrets are, that's the biggest one. When you just, you wanted to sing, play the guitar, you know, run that marathon, whatever that passion that you, we all have value and we all matter. And you so deserve to follow, you know, your heart. And it's in there. It's in there. Something, there's something in there that you love. So go for it now.
So this leads me to another question, which you make a great point about how important it is to take care of our bodies while we can, and why we should not look to something else or someone else to make us happy, that it sets us up for excessive suffering. Mm-hmm. Whoa, let's talk about that.
Well, and that's the whole, I just showed up. Movement and message in, and I shared in my TED talk and I share everywhere, because we kind of, women especially, I'm gonna be, you know, we became that, we kind of went from June Cleaver to, you know, like we're very submissive and our husbands were in charge, to I am woman, hear me roar. And then it's like I'm very independent and strong and I can take care of everybody else. And it's like, oh, she's so great, or he's so great, men too. He takes care of everyone else and puts himself last. And, you know, I'm here to say there's no more, let's fire that martyr. And there's no more gold stars for the excessively busy person, because what you are being is a very poor example to others. You are not being the very best version of yourself. And what I witnessed in 30 years of nursing, you will break down. Mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially, some way. So how is that serving anyone? And to be like, when I look at you and you have your fabulous hair and background and beautiful, vibrant shirt, and you just like, you're oozing positivity and love. Isn't that the best thing that you can do?
I love it. You know what? Right. Here's my story. I'll tell you a story. As I've said on this podcast before, I live in a mid-rise, and there are many people who live, you know, who are here. And every day I wake up, because I lost my husband in a car accident, and every single day with what I've been through, and every day I wake up and I say, hello, it's a new day. I'm here and I am having a good time. And today I'm going to meet Yvonne Heath or whatever is going on in my world. So the other day I happened to walk down, and one of the people in the lobby said, why are you always happy? Mm-hmm. I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm happy because I'm alive. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy because I'm meeting wonderful people and I'm having an interesting life and all of that. And what I wanted to say to this person was, why are you so unhappy? Mm-hmm. And when you see a happy person like me, why aren't you intrigued to see if you could get a little of that for yourself?
Beautiful. Beautiful. You're choosing. You're yes. choosing. And that doesn't mean you have been through some heart-wrenching trauma in your life. That doesn't, it's not, it, instead of, right? It doesn't mean your life has been all rosy.
Are you kidding? No.
It has not been all rosy. My life has not been all rosy. And yet it's this conscious choice. And again, when you say, oh, right, I'm the only person that can make me happy. First of all, it gives me the power. I'm in charge of myself. And, you know, when people talk about compassion fatigue and burnout and all of these things, I believe a great part of that is you're trying to fix everyone and make everyone happy. And you don't have a belief about life and death that creates a soft landing for you, and you don't have coping skills and strategies, right? Because I could not continue the work I was doing or doing now because I meet a lot of people who are grieving and somebody died young, a child or whatever. I couldn't, my heart used to just be bleeding everywhere. And now I haven't started caring less. I've just started accepting more that we are all here for our journey. I don't know some journeys are 5 minutes. Some are 5 years, some are 50 years, and some are 100. I don't like that. I accept it because otherwise I cannot just show up for others and without suffering excessively. And the best, and when people say, and this is what you're doing as well, Irene, when people say, how can I go on? The love of my life died. What can I do? And I get, as I shared in everywhere, be the evidence that someone's life made a difference.
That's absolutely right.
Isn't that such a beautiful thing to hold on to?
Yes.
Be the evidence that someone's life made a difference. Live your life just gritty and fully and do everything that they would love for you to do or what they wanted to do, and continue sharing. Their spirit is always, right?
Always with you.
We are human beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. This is not meant to last forever.
That's right.
Our spirit does. So we stay spiritually connected, and how choose to believe that. My goodness. I love knowing that. I love that we stay. My children, I mean, when I started writing my book, the twins were 9. They were at home. Ty was already gone. They're like, I know, Mom. Nobody lives forever. We don't know how long we're here. We stay spiritually connected. I get it. And I was like, well, I'm glad you get it. We're going to keep having these conversations for life.
That's right. And one day you'll really be so grateful that you had these conversations. I want to talk to you about the talk. And I want all of our listeners to hear about this because we've mentioned it. But what would you say is the talk about? Is there a prescribed script for the talk? Like, is the talk about, listen, I give you permission to pull that plug. I need to have a talk with you about finances. I need to have a talk with you about it's okay to let me go or whatever. What would you say is in that talk? Or is it just an individual thing to each particular family? I've definitely had the talk with my son about pulling the plug, not pulling the plug, the financial things and all of that. I even told him once, listen, I don't know if I still feel that way anymore. I said, but I'm very social. When that time comes, have a celebration of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So what would you advise people, Yvonne, about having that talk? Because that's so important. And do they just walk into their parents' house and say, okay, now we're sitting down?
Well, and you know, it's so funny because so many people come to me and they have like their little pen. It's like, okay, how do I get my dad to do this? And they're ready, right?
Right.
I say, so first of all, I don't believe that that's where we should start. I believe that we should start with us, because when we're asking other people to do what we haven't done, it's kind of hypocritical, actually. And when you do it yourself first, then you also know the things that you had to sort out and your lawyer, whatever. So
that's That's so smart. Because even if you're talking to your father, you don't know if, God forbid, you get hit by a car tomorrow. You want to put what's in place, even though you're younger. Everything doesn't necessarily progress in a logical, what we think is a logical way.
We don't all die of old age and we don't all get a warning.
Right.
So let's just, right? That's the elephant in the room, even though it's disguised, the elephant is in the room. So I always tell people, so start with yourself. So A, then you know. So, okay, I'm in the state, and of course you're in the States, I'm in Canada, it's different. So who would be my power of attorney? What's a power of attorney? Oh, okay, power of attorney would make my decisions for me personally in the event that I could not make a decision for myself. Oh, okay, power of attorney for finances would do it financially. Oh, okay. And then, a will's different. Wouldn't it be wise to figure all that out yourself? And please register as an organ donor so you never have to have that conversation. Then when you come to your family and say, by the way, I have given you the greatest gift. I have given you this gift because I love you. And this is one of the best things I can do for you. I have done my advanced care plan. I have a power of attorney. This is who it is. And I've chosen this person. So it's easier for you so that you don't have to fight. Joe, it's not you. I'm sorry. You can be mad at me if you want to. For finances, it's you, Helen. Sorry, Rita, you're not very good with finance. Like, you know, having those conversations. Here's my will. Here's my lawyer. He has a copy. I have registered as an organ donor. This is important to me.
Tell everyone why that's important to you. For people listening to the podcast, right? Oh. Because some religions don't like that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because most religions are actually okay with it. Really? And I've got all these pamphlets. And I think that, again, I have been that nurse at the bedside when someone is on life support. And there's that time we have to have that awkward conversation. I'm so sorry your loved one is in a coma. Have you considered organ donation? What a horrific time to have to think about that, to have to ask that. It's awful and, again, avoidable. I would encourage every family to have those conversations before you have to. I went to the transplant games, the Olympic, the transplant games in 2016, and I met hundreds of people of all ages that would not be alive if it wasn't for organ donation.
That's fantastic.
I just actually on my show, on my TV show, my television show, I just interviewed a man whose son died of epilepsy. And then the next show, I interviewed the heart recipient.
Wow, that's amazing.
The dad and that man are now friends.
Oh my God.
I mean, you know, like, these are the things that, so I've heard beautiful stories. I know hundreds of people who are alive because of it. Have the conversation before you have to. If you feel like there's a religious issue, really look into it. And imagine if you said, by the way, I've registered as an organ donor, let all your family know. And then you never have to have that conversation, right? So this is all about eliminating that excessive suffering. Because those conversations will have to be had at some point, possibly. It's not avoidable forever. So when you do this for your family, you say, you know, I am asking you to do the same for me because I want to honor you in your life and at end of life. Yes, this is awkward. Let's do it anyway. Yes, it's uncomfortable. Let's talk about it anyway. Let's do that for each other. I've done it for you. And then give them a deadline, pun intended. See what I did there? Deadline.
I got it.
Yeah. Because like you think about it, right? When someone is going to be in labor and delivery and have a baby, you've got 9 months. Would you ever just say, oh, well, I'm just going to wing it. I'm just going to wing birth. You plan for it. You plan, over plan. Everyone's planning. You talk about it. But when it comes to end of life, because we don't have that date, oh yeah, I'll get to it. Right. And more often than not, we wait until someone died to have those great conversations.
Yeah. I hear that. And you know, there's another thing I want you to bring out that was in your book. You talk about a person needs to have their post that they can hang on to in times of despair. So tell us about that. And what was your personal post while you were going through things? And I also had a post. I related so much to your book. So what was people what their post is and about yours.
I love that. And I mean, I have, if people follow me on my website, they will get tips on navigating global grief and my 7 takeaways, which takeaway number 6 is find your post. So I created 7 takeaways, which I share in all my presentations and in my online program. And I was going through these takeaways that I believe are the principles that we need to live by, to live life to the fullest, learn to grieve and have that talk. And I was going through them and it was like, I'm missing something. So I went to visit 101-year-old Minnie Boys. And I said, Minnie, you've been here more than a century. I'm missing something. Like, I want to give some people something else. And she said, you know, we talked about that we're death phobic. We don't have these conversations. And she said, you know, we all need a post, something we can hang on to no matter what in times of despair. And I just said, oh my gosh, Minnie, that's brilliant. And she said, oh, you're excited about a post? And I said, yes, because what your post is something you can turn to that is there. It is permanent. It is there no matter what, no matter when, because life is unpredictable. Prepare for anything, and change is the only constant.
Absolutely.
Relationships change, where you live changes, your jobs change. So your post is a constant, something that you can turn to at 3 a.m. when you're grieving, 10 years later when you have a grief attack. So for some people, it's nature, yoga, meditation, art, music. And for me, it's absolutely nature. It, like, no matter where I am, I can find a little piece of nature. And when I go and connect with nature, it reminds me, when my heart feels so broken, as nature continuously changes, how broken I feel in that moment is also temporary.
Wow.
That's your profound post.
That's a quote. Yvonne, how would you explain the circle of life to a child?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because when you talk about the circle of life, or how do you explain death or whatever, I shared in my book the fact that there's teachable moments along the way, right? And they present themselves. So what I've done with my kids and children, I wait for either they ask a question, or the perfect one in the circle of life, in the Lion King, Mufasa talking to Simba. Mufasa, the sun will set on my time on earth, and it will rise, and you will be king. And I was like, oh, that's such a great, do you get? He's talking about the circle of life.
Right.
And you know, children are curious, and children are so receptive. If you just talk about the matter of facts of life in a matter of fact way. So I just, like, I tell my kids, well, everything that's living, you know, moving, living, breathing, dies. And then, you know, like Mufasa said, you know, the leaves fall and they die, and they become part of the earth. And we do too. People do as well. And so, you know, I always encourage people and parents, like, you know, you don't have to sit there all stiff and say, okay, we have to start having this conversation. But those teachable moments will happen. You see an animal that died on the road, a squirrel that got run over. It's like, oh, you know, their heart isn't beating anymore. That means they've died. They're no longer living. And they're there, teachable moments. And these conversations should be ongoing, right? Mm-hmm. Make it easy on yourself. You know, just don't put too much pressure. Just look for teachable moments. And, you know, if you have to have that conversation, like with organ donation, I called my son out west. I said, awkward conversation coming up. I want to talk to you about this. So, well, that's weird, Mom.
I love the way you introduce it. I'm going to adopt that when I have to talk to my son. Awkward conversation coming up.
Awkward conversation coming up. I'm a little uncomfortable here. Like, we just have to be easier on ourselves, right? And why should they not be awkward, especially? We haven't normalized these conversations, certainly in our culture. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. What would you, of all people on this planet, Yvonne Heath, what would you like to tell our Grief and Rebirth podcast audience about the importance of healing in order to have a well-lived life?
You know, I believe that the greatest thing that we can do for ourselves in healing is just allow our humanness, allow your humanness, be extra kind to yourself, be extra gentle and patient. Allow your process, acknowledge and allow your feelings. Don't rush it. Don't be like, oh, I should be over this by now. Because you don't get over grief. You build your new life around it. Allow yourself, because grief and joy can coexist. So allow joy in whenever you can. Create joyful moments whenever you can. And truthfully, I know that if we take better care of ourselves and each other, our hearts will heal. Battered, scarred, and never the same, but they will heal. If you learn to just show up for yourself first and just show up for each other, and ask when you're not doing well, please forget the polite conversation. I am struggling today. And be okay with allowing your humanness.
And if you need some support or help, it is out there.
It is out there.
Go get the life transition coach. Go get the person who can help you. Go do what you need to do.
You do not have to do this alone.
Right. everyone wants to connect with you now. So tell us, Yvonne Heath, how do our listeners connect with you? How do they find your book? And do you have any kind of offer for them or anything like that?
All you have to do is go to our website, loveyourlifetodeath.com. It is my TED Talks there. And like I said, there's resources. You can get my book, my online program. And if anyone would like an I Just Showed Up bracelet, I'd be happy to send one to them or two, just because, yes.
Oh, that's lovely.
Great reminder.
And what is your tip on finding joy in life? Yvonne Heath, of all people, your tip.
My tip for finding joy in your life is just show up for yourself first and just show up for others. The two greatest things you can do.
There you go.
Greatest things you can do.
You're a great thing. You're terrific, Yvonne. I cannot thank you enough for joining me today on Grief and Rebirth podcast. I especially love this quote from your book, Love Your Life to Death. What could you do right here, right now, to be more fulfilled in your life, to create unshakable happiness, to die with fewer regrets? If you knew your life would be over soon, what would you change? Believe in yourself and your ability to create change, to create the life you want. Then and only then can you live more fully and die more peacefully, knowing that you have done all you could to become the best version of yourself and live your life purposely. I mean, all of our listeners, you really should get this book. It's absolutely wonderful. It is incredibly wise. And I am sure that every person listening to this is reflecting right now on the legacy of life they're going to leave behind them. Yvonne, thank you so much for this absolutely wonderful, for your wonderful book and this very special interview. And here's a reminder, everyone, that you can see the show notes and all Grief and Rebirth podcast episodes on IreneWeinberg.com. And make sure to follow us and like us, we know you do, on social at Irene S. Weinberg on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And as I like to say, to be continued, many blessings, and bye for now.